From KCRW, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
I was absolutely in tears every single day. You try to be brave, and you try to talk yourself out of it, and you know you shouldn't. But when people are being that in your face, I don't know how else to react.
It's like somebody picked up the rug in a beautiful room and found rotten mold underneath it. We're all sick, and we don't even know it. And there's an opportunity now to clean out the mold.
Comedy writer Janice Hirsch and Grey's Anatomy showrunner Krista Vernoff are two of the many women who have come forward in the wake of Harvey Weinstein's downfall to share their own accounts of gender bias and sexual harassment in Hollywood. They talk about what they've had to put up with and why they hope the culture will finally change. But first on the News Banter, the fallout continues. Stay tuned. It's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my colleague and banter, Matt Bellany of The Hollywood Reporter. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
So we are still talking. This show is going to be about today, the ongoing aftermath of the Harvey Weinstein allegations. And first of all, I will mention that Harvey Weinstein has just sued his former company for reasons that are not entirely clear, but I guess hoping to get his money's worth out of that company at some point. So there's a tremendous debacle going on at the Weinstein Company, and how it ends, I don't know, but my money's on Chapter 11. And, you know, the important thing from a cultural point of view is that a lot of people asked me when we were on television doing interviews about this stuff, is this the turning point? And I have said many times, I'm not sure. But one thing that keeps it alive is when people are still talking about it, still coming forward. And when you have people like Ashley Judd, as she did this past week, coming forward again on Good Morning America, and certainly she hopes that this is the turning point.
This is the moment. And if we want it to be the moment, it for sure will be the moment.
So meanwhile, allegations every day, somebody drawn in every day, shows being canceled, and the reshuffling of a lot of decks.
Yeah, I mean, we said on the show a couple weeks ago, this could be just the beginning, and it turns out that was right. This week, we saw the NBC News analyst Mark Halperin get accused of sexual harassment when he was at ABC News. And in the aftermath of that, he was put on leave. HBO canceled a planned adaptation of one of his books about the election. Showtime said they were reconsidering the circus show that he appears on. So there's real consequences to this. We saw James Toback, the director, accused by dozens of women of harassment. And this scandal has really touched the fashion world, the literary world, all aspects of media.
Yeah. Now, one of the most surprising allegations that came out this past week or so was the news that Bill O'Reilly had paid one person, one of the women who had complained about him, $32 million. And that was followed by Fox renewing his contract. And this raises a lot of questions for me. I mean, obviously, everyone was gobsmacked by that number and thought, what do you do to have to pay $32 million? And to me, the ongoing question, too, is, what did Fox know and what did they do about it? You know, James Murdoch publicly said this past week that he didn't know. Megyn Kelly had something to say about that on Seth Meyers' show, late night show on NBC.
Fox says it didn't know. The question remains, why didn't they? Why wouldn't you know? Why wouldn't you ask before you bring this man back into the workplace and, you know, unleash him on the workforce?
And I think that's a damn good question. I don't know about you, but James Murdoch, you know, he was embroiled in the hacking scandal in Britain and signed some very big check of hush money in that and said, you know, he didn't nonetheless really know. And now he's back again saying, I didn't really know.
Yeah. And we don't know if he knew or not. So we can't say for certain. But what we can question is why he didn't know, if he didn't. And there's not really a good answer. I mean, this is a guy who is not just another Fox employee. He was the most important star on Fox News. This is someone that the CEO of the company should be paying close attention to. And when you're trying to re-sign him, you got to look at what these settlements were for. And yes, the dollar amount, because that's a giant red flag.
Yeah, and it's really striking because this is not just also about James Murdoch. This is about the Fox News apparatus. And we know that Roger Ailes was a predator for years. Terrible details have come out about that. And he ran black ops against people who he saw as opponents and terrible, terrible behavior. And some of those people are still there and some of them are being called out. You know, there was a person who posted on Facebook about how his then girlfriend had gotten a call from first from an executive at Fox, who then put Bill O'Reilly on the phone. And what Bill O'Reilly was trying to do was to destroy another woman who was coming forward against him. And he was pressuring this particular woman that he had called to give him dirt, which was the pattern for a lot of these guys. I mean, Harvey Weinstein did the same thing. So who put Bill O'Reilly on the phone with an employee, a woman employee at Fox, to elicit trash about a person who was accusing him of sexual harassment? That's how this company reacted to these allegations. I mean, I think it raises questions of how legal was this behavior. And I don't know whether the New York is still going after them, but it seems to me there's a lot to go after.
Yeah, and it's not just what you and I know. It's what James Murdoch should have known. And this is the CEO of the company. And, you know, you have a duty to know if your company and the employees there are acting in an illegal manner. So if this was ever raised to anyone there in a position of authority, that's where the company needs to get involved. And it seems, at least from what we've seen, that either they knew about it or there was an effort to not know about it.
Well, it looks to me like they were actively colluding to prevent these women from coming forward, and that is not okay. So there may be tremendous fallout, and we've talked before about how important Fox News is to Fox. However, there's just an analyst that came out saying that in September 2017, Fox News advertising declined 17%, which is a lot as compared with the previous month of September in 2016. And it's contrasted. You could say they had a lot of money spent there because of the election, but CNN only dipped 1% and MSNBC increased 2%. So it looks like maybe advertisers are getting increasingly nervous about Fox News.
Well, it also shows the value of someone like O'Reilly, and this is why they cared so much, because O'Reilly delivered ratings.
Well, now they're trying Laura Ingraham and Tucker Carlson, and we'll see whether that brings Fox News revenue back where it was. But I think there could be other problems on the horizon. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, editorial director of The Hollywood Reporter. As you just heard on The Banter, in the weeks since The New York Times and The New Yorker brought down Harvey Weinstein, women have continued to speak out. Two of those women recently wrote powerful personal essays for The Hollywood Reporter about their own experiences with discrimination and harassment in the industry. We asked them to share their stories on the show today. Veteran comedy writer Janice Hirsch tells of losing a dream job working for Gary Shandling. But first we hear from Krista Vernoff, executive producer of Grey's Anatomy on ABC. Several years ago, Vernoff was trying to cast a TV pilot. The choice for one of the roles was between two women. One clearly was the stronger actress and better for the part. Everyone agreed, except the male network president. He said the other actress had a sexier build. One of his underlings, a woman executive, spoke up on behalf of the choice that everyone else had favored. Vernoff got the actress of her choice, but 2 weeks later, that female executive was abruptly fired. Vernoff says fear of retaliation is one reason many women in Hollywood don't report discrimination or abuse. So what was the couple of things that were striking in the essay that you did was, first of all, you addressed this notion that there's blame on women like Gwyneth Paltrow or, you know, some of these others who have come forward now saying they should have spoken up sooner, they could have spared other people. And, you know, this kind of victim blaming you address, you say as if by sacrificing their lives and careers, they could have single-handedly turned the tide.
Yes, we see this over and over and over again in our culture. We see this over and over again in society. When one woman comes forward, she often, even in open court, gets painted as a slut or a crazy person. Dozens of women came forward and accused Cosby of rape, and culturally, sort of no one paid any attention and nobody believed it until a male comic called it out. And then people started to pay attention, and there were still, and still are, just an onslaught of people who want to believe that these dozens of women were invested in some conspiracy, in some bringing down of this iconic male comic. And what happened here is when you have all the Oscar-winning actresses in town saying, oh, hey, Harvey did that to me too, it's very hard to dismiss them as attention seekers. And what does Angelina Jolie, what does Gwyneth Paltrow have to gain by saying, hey, Harvey tried that with me too? They have nothing to gain. They don't need the attention. And so they're much harder to dismiss. And what's amazing is that the power of all those women rising up together has actually sort of brought down this incredibly powerful man. And then society wants to turn on even these women. And then we can't come up with a way to dismiss them. So we go, well, why didn't you come out sooner? You're so powerful. Why didn't you come out sooner? If you're such a feminist and you were such a victim of this man, why didn't you come out sooner? And nobody wants to look at the reality that had they come out sooner, they wouldn't have that power. They wouldn't have the platform that they are now using. It's so dismissive. It's so much misogyny to find a way to point fingers at the women who are using their voices now. It is rattling. It is enraging.
And then the next point you make in this essay, which is so striking, is you say, even knowing that he was a harasser, you know, an alleged harasser, whatever, we all stayed in business with him. And you yourself says you hadn't done business with him, but would have.
Right.
And had a recent opportunity to put a short film of yours into a film festival that he is aligned with.
Right. They had seen my film in some other festival, and would you submit to this festival? And Kim, I didn't even stop and think twice about submitting to that festival. And when this whole thing came down, I found myself on the phone with my other friends who are liberals, who are activists, who think of ourselves as people who wouldn't work with the Harvey Weinsteins of the world. And they were all going, oh my God, I pitched him last month. Oh my God, of course I knew these stories, but I stayed in business with him in this way. I wanted to be in business with him in this way. Why did I not think twice about submitting my film? And what I came to was that I am so inured to this kind of story, to this kind of behavior. I am so inured in this town to this kind of thing that the truth is, if I didn't work with people whose behavior I find reprehensible, I would never have had a career. I had my own experiences with reprehensible sexism very early on in my career. And had I stood up and said, this isn't okay, and you can't ask me if I'm good in bed in front of a whole writer's room full of men, that's not okay, I don't know that I would be a showrunner today. And it makes you sick now. Like today, with this spotlight shined on it, it makes all of us sick. We're all sick at our own culpability, our own having played along with this culture for so long. But we did this because we wanted to get some power. We wanted to have a voice. We wanted to have a platform. I now get to try to change the cultural conversation. I now get to put overtly feminist messages on a major network television program that is seen by millions of people all over the country and all over the world because I have accumulated some status by getting along. It's a really complicated equation.
You know, I've made the point in a number of interviews that I've given about this, that Harvey was not at the peak of his powers at this point and therefore was vulnerable to being brought down, but that there are people who I am hearing about who are at the peak of power. And I can tell you as a reporter, I'm finding a lot more resistance. You know, it is like the rerun of the Harvey situation with a different player who is in a more powerful position. So what I'm wondering, honestly, is does it make any difference? Is Harvey going to be an outlier that you know, such egregious conduct alleged in this case, and then, you know, other people are getting away with also illegal behavior, but, you know, still the status quo ante?
You know, I don't know what happens now with the other predators, but here's what I do think is going to change as a result of Harvey. I don't think anymore anyone who hears these stories is going to sit quietly by, or I think many of us will no longer. And I've had conversations with very, very powerful male producers who've worked with Harvey who've said to me, this has been really difficult. I've had to really go, what did I know and where was I complicit and why was I complicit and what can I do differently? And what I've said to them is, you know what you could do differently? You can hire more women. You can hire more women. You can begin to address this problem from the inside. Stop just promoting the people who remind you of you. You know, it's not that hard. We get told over and over. I was making a pilot with a studio a couple of years ago, and they sent me a list, and the approved directors were, you know, I think they sent me, it was like 76 men and 7 women. And I called back and I said, I can't even consider this list. I'm not even asking you to hit 50%. I'm asking you to get close, though. This is crazy. And it was women on the phone. And they said, well, that's just a really tough That's just a really tough mark to hit. And we now, all of us, we have to do better. We have to get more women approved. You know, I tried to hire Jill Soloway. I tried to get Jill approved to direct a pilot that I was making after she'd won the directing award at Sundance and before she did Transparent. And I couldn't get her on the list.
Wow.
So it's for real a problem that men get promoted off the strength of one good indie movie and that women have to try to get episodic television work, try to get their foot in a door. They get one shot and out. Oh, it's, you know, I was sitting at a table not that long ago and the producing director on a show said, you know, who's the director? And somebody named a very famous woman and he went, ugh, another girl.
Oh my God, somebody actually said those words
out loud
in this day and age. Incredible.
So these things, I think, are going to change now. Not all of them, not across the board, but I think that this Harvey thing has been so shocking for so many people because most of us didn't know he was a rapist, but we knew that he was disgusting and everyone was sort of prepared to work with him anyway. And everyone is saying, wow, look at this. It's like somebody picked up the rug in a beautiful room and found rotten mold underneath it. And we're all sick and we don't even know it. And there's an opportunity now to get, you know, to clean out the mold.
Like, yes, although we've just seen a bunch of top jobs in TV, one after another. White man, white man, white man, like five or six in the last several months.
Right. So here's what I can say. I'm working in Shondaland. It's a different world over here for sure. But I have a staff of 12 and nine of us are women, writers on the staff. And we have 50% female directors at least this year on this 24-episode show. And, you know, we have a female line producer and we have a female UPM and we have a female producing director and we have many female department heads and it's not that hard. Like, that's my answer is it's not that hard.
Amazingly, it can be done.
It's not that hard a mark to hit. But also, we all have to start saying, oh, I was in this too. What can I do to change? Can I stop accepting no from my male boss when I submit female directors' names? Can I fight that harder? Can I risk him thinking I'm a difficult woman? Because that's what happens, particularly with women, is in order to move up, you really have to get along. And in order to really get along, you cannot make feminism and moving women forward your primary talking point. But there's a lot of women now who played along to get along who are in positions of power like I am, who I hope very much will go, you know what? I have some power now. I'm going to use it. Let's approve these women who had these phenomenal movies at Sundance. Let's give them a shot. Let's support them.
Sounds easy. I hope it
right?
happens.
Doesn't it sound kind of simple?
Yes.
And this is the thing, Kim, 3 weeks ago before this Harvey thing happened, this seemed really hard and like a conversation we might never have. And now I am having this conversation with men who I never expected to be able to have this conversation with.
So inadvertently, irony, Harvey may have made a difference in exactly the opposite direction of what he was pursuing constantly for years.
I actually think that that's the truth. You know, I'm a little bit addicted to silver linings, but I do think that that's sometimes how the world works.
Krista Vernoff is the showrunner of Grey's Anatomy on ABC. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Kim. I'm really grateful to be here.
Coming up after a short break, comedy writer Janice Hirsch tells us about a dream job turning into a nightmare. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? Critics rave The Greatest Hits is a music-infused romance that hits all the right notes and the most original time travel story in years. Featuring music by Nelly Furtado, Beach House, Jamie XX, and more. Watch The Greatest Hits, now streaming on Hulu.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW Donation Car. Already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. Today, we're going to hear a very personal story about one woman's experience with gender bias and sexual harassment. TV writer and producer Janice Hirsch started out working on Square Pegs in 1982. Her sitcom credits include Murphy Brown, Frasier, and Will and Grace. And she's still a busy working professional. Following the Harvey Weinstein revelations, Hirsch wrote about an episode early in her career when she got hired to work for one of her comedy heroes. The year is 1986, so Gary Shandling calls you and offers you this job. It's Gary Shandling's show, which is on Showtime, and this is a huge break for you.
Getting an offer from Gary Shandling came out of the blue. I'd been doing very, very traditional sitcoms, and it was fine, but to get a call from Shandling, that was huge. Everybody was talking about it. Everybody wanted it. It was just the most fun.
So you wrote two of the first six episodes and got nice reviews in the LA Times, and they actually mentioned you by name in that?
The kiss of death is when a non-producer, you know, somebody who hasn't been doing it for 100 years, gets mentioned twice in 6 weeks by Howard Rosenberg, I guess, at the time.
He was the reviewer.
He was the reviewer, yeah.
And so now the arrow is pointing at you and everybody's jealous.
Yes, okay. No one ever said anything, but while I'm thrilled when I open the newspaper in the morning and see my name, you do go, oh, why couldn't you mention somebody else? You know, my mother was happy, but their mothers weren't.
And little did your mother know.
Right.
So the guys start leaving you out of meetings. You say, oh, we couldn't find you when you were sitting at your desk. They start excluding you from the table. This is in the writer's room where ideas are bandied about.
And when we were doing rewrites, they would send me off either to write. There was one woman on the show, one actress, and they would, because you're go write the slit scene.
The slit scene.
Which I promise you, I had no idea what they were talking about. I knew it was for the actress, but it took me till one day in the ladies' room where I went, oh my God. I mean, and I was hardly naive. I had worked at the National Lampoon. I knew words. I was one of the boys. I got it. But that shocked me.
So you're left out of the meetings, and you say my mantra became, I won't cry until I get home. It was amended to, I won't cry until I get in the parking lot, which became, I won't cry until I get to the stairwell, which morphed into, I'm crying. So you were literally, regularly in tears.
I was absolutely in tears every single day, and it was, you try to be brave and you try to talk yourself out of it, and you know you shouldn't. But when people are being that in your face, I don't know how else to react. And also, I was a baby. And you know what? I would have cried anyway. I would have cried. If it happened to me tomorrow, I'd be crying. I mean, that was just mean. And I actually wrote a letter to one of the showrunners and said, this is what's going on. And I really feel horrible. Why is this happening? Is there something I've done? Is there something I can do? What? And the next day he asked me if I'd drive him home. His car was at the shop. So I had to be in the car with him. And I said, did you get my note? And he said, yeah, I don't understand. We love you. We love you. Not looking me in the eye, but telling me, we love you. We love you. You're wonderful. You're imagining all this.
So now we get to this incident one day, and I'm going to ask you just to read these couple of paragraphs.
One day I was sitting in Gary's office across the desk from him. There were a few of the writers, and one of the actors were in the room too. And I felt a tap on my shoulder, my right shoulder. I turned, and there was that actor's flaccid penis draped on it like a pirate's dead parrot. Riotous laughter ensued from all but one of us. Day or so later, Brad Gray, one of the show's producers, called me into his office. He said, I understand we have a problem. He knew. I was so relieved. So I think you should quit. Wait, what? This was my problem? Shouldn't he at least fire me so I could get paid? Nope. I was to do the smart thing and quit today.
So in the moment, I'm sure you were just absolutely gobsmacked.
I couldn't believe he said he knew we had a problem and the solution was for me to leave. And I knew I was a baby writer. What could I do? You can't sue. This was Brillstein Gray. Brillstein Gray was...
huge management agency.
They owned comedy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They had John Belushi, Bill Murray.
And they had Gary Shandling. And they had all of the top writers on that show.
So you quit.
That day, I left his office. I picked up my purse from my office. I got in the car. I found a payphone. I called my agent, my manager. I stopped at a 7-Eleven and I bought a beer. I went to my manager's office, and my agent had come over, and I sat there and I drank a Miller Lite.
Sometimes you just got to do it.
That
right?
was what I had.
So when this has happened, and Brad Gray, who subsequently became chairman of Paramount and died recently, when he is telling you have to quit, does it occur to you to go to Gary Shandling? Do you blame Gary Shandling and assume that he and Brad have talked this all over and decided to get rid of you?
It was untenable at the point that Brad called me into his office. I was miserable. I'm crying every day. That's not a job I want to keep. And so I thought I'll get fired and at least I'll get paid off or whatever. And then he just said, leave, and I left.
But I'm asking about the Gary. About.
I did not want to talk to Gary. I didn't want to talk to anybody after that. I just wanted to be done.
And then you started to tell the story everywhere.
I told that story every chance I got. I had to own it, first of all. I couldn't let it just be in my mind. It was like putting the head of your enemy on a stake in front of the village. Because I worked with guys. Comedy rooms are mostly guys. Again, I am not a prude. I have as dirty a mouth. I will work as blue as anybody. But just so they know, even I have a line.
So fast forward. You have many credits.
Many credits.
And you're still working.
And I'm still doing a pilot right now for CBS.
Which
with
is amazing.
Jamie Lee Curtis. Yeah.
Yes. We're still
Old
up
Lady
on-
River. I'm rolling along.
And you're working on this pilot, I guess. This is a different pilot with these two young women?
Oh, yes. I was punching up a pilot.
Punching up meaning giving a little extra zhuzh.
Right. I was giving an extra zhuzh on a pilot that was for Carol Burnett and Amy Poehler was
right.
producing, and my friend Mike Saltzman had written. So I'm there every minute that I can possibly be there.
And this is very recent.
This was in May, right. I think. May, June, something like that. And these two young writers, I didn't know them, but I liked them. They were funny and... young writers. I always like to see young women writers. And at the end of the rewrite, I don't know, it's 11 o'clock at night, and they say, we'll walk you to your car. And I think, aw, they're helping the old lady to her car. You know, that's nice.
That's
and
nice.
We're chatting and we're having fun, and we get to my car, and they said, we want to thank you. And I go, why? And they said, for getting that penis on your shoulder. You got it on your shoulder so we never, ever had to. And it was the first time anybody had ever referenced that to me. It was the first time I realized that I had had some kind of impact. When they said that, and then we said goodnight, I got in my car, and I started crying. And it's the first time I cried happy tears in my car after leaving a rewrite in my entire career.
And the reason was that in telling your story... you sort of kicked off a thing where women started to tell stories to basically warn each other off of people who were like that.
Exactly. Women were warning each other, and women were saying to the guys, if you do this, I will make it a funny story. Because isn't that what they always say, that men are afraid women are laughing at them and women are afraid that men are going to kill them?
Right.
But men don't like to be laughed at. And so this story made it funny.
The power of storytelling.
And the power of laughter.
Janice Hirsch is a television writer and producer. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Kim. I loved it.
And that's The Business. Caitlin Parker produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. You can subscribe to The Business as well as other great KCRW podcasts at kcrw.com/podcasts. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business. But first, I have a quick request for our podcast listeners. KCRW wants to learn more about you, who you are, and how you listen. So if you have 3 minutes to help us out, head over to kcrw.com/survey. And thanks.